Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, man. I had a cool weekend where I got to go visit the opening night of a new bar that my friend's the pastry chef of in Philly, actually, a place called Lock Bar, which is nice. Kind of a raw bar meets cocktail bar meets kind of, you know, more sort of fine dining-y type of place. The sort of spot where I kind of walked in. It was a good thing I was wearing a shirt with buttons because it's normally the sort of thing where people come up to me like, please, sir, this is a nice place. But It was a lovely little spot. So if you're in the city of brotherly love, I'd say check it out. I wanted to give them a little brotherly love because they showed me a really fun time and a good night. But I also stumbled across this fun little piece of news that came through this morning. Apparently, Souther, podcasters are the most trusted media personalities among U.S. consumers, according to new research.
Well,
yes, you and I are trustworthy.
That puts us in a power position. Yes,
it does. I know, which is actually, I mean, it's kind of cool and it sort of makes sense, right? Because there is kind of a relationship that you have with, you know, there's a more kind of, I guess, emotional connection to podcasts because it's not like, I guess, turning on the news where it sort of feels like this very universal thing. It's like you seek out podcasts. So you find one that feels like it's been tailored for you, which I think is neat. But it also means that we are some of the most respected media personalities out there. So good for us. And according to the statement, 75% of podcast listeners, I'm quoting here, 75% of podcast listeners say they have listened to a podcaster for a product endorsement compared to just 62% of social media users and 55% of cable viewers. So we are, in fact, super trusted to give product endorsements. By the way, Souther, don't you have a hot sauce coming out?
I do. Yes, thank you. So speaking of product endorsement, I launched my cocktail mug, which I did in collaboration with Tiki Diablo on this past Monday. Now, so far, I've only sent out the initial net to my personal mailing list of about 10,000 people. I will be announcing it on social media, but I held off on social media so that I could launched my Kickstarter yesterday, my first ever personal Kickstarter. As you know, I'm doing one with Shaker and Spoon, but for the Better with Bitters experience. But I've launched my own Kickstarter for my hot sauce, which is called Desert Curse. It is made with habanero, pineapple, and mezcal, making it ideal for both cocktail and culinary applications. The Kickstarter went live yesterday, and within 30 minutes, we blew past our initial goal. We are chasing right up now to our stretch goal of $10,000, where we'll add more awards. And I don't really know how Kickstarter works. It's my first one, but it's fun. And it's fun to watch that little ticker climb with the money. So very excited to see that my Kickstarter is well, I mean, I guess it's kicking off and it's starting this new endeavor for me. I think our listener is pretty aware because, as you were saying, you create a relationship with your podcasts that you listen to. So I think our listener is pretty aware that I was a chef for a long time and I'm definitely known as a drinks guy now. But I wanted to make a product that kind of got me to use my love of spicy food and drink and incorporate that into the cocktail world as well. So this hot sauce is, I wouldn't say it was my primary design, but it is certainly designed to be delicious in beverages as much as it is to be delicious on food. You know, like Tabasco is great hot sauce and I love it. It's not so great in a cocktail, right? But my sauce, given that it has booze in it, and that's going to be the theme. If I make other flavors, they'll always have some booze component. So this one has mezcal in it, which gives it just a little smoky, earthy, mineral flavor on the backside of that habanero pineapple. It's really delicious. Can't wait to get some in your hands, Greg. Can't wait to get some in the hands of all the people who are already sponsoring the Kickstarter. And we'll get it out there, man.
Awesome, dude. And first of all, congratulations. And it's a good thing you held off on posting it on social media, because it would have been 13% less reliable than coming out of the mouths of people's, of our listeners' two favorite podcasters here.
Right. Well, that's about the mug, right? So the mug, just real briefly, it's beautiful. It says Café de l'Enfer on it, which just means cafe from hell. Obviously, I designed them for the bar, but then they take, you know, 18 months to 2 years to get produced by Tiki Diablo because he's so backed up all the time. And we had to move Avant-Garden into the Café de l'Enfer space. So the space doesn't exist anymore, but luckily it's just a cool phrase, the Café from Hell. It's got a skull motif. The base of the mug itself is a cloven goat's foot. It's very, very cool. And I created a digital ebook of recipes that of both originals and classics that fit the mug. It's got a 22-ounce capacity, so it's a nice sized mug for all your tropical style drinks. It's really great. And like I said, I've already sold 30% of them. I only made 100, but they are beautiful. So
awesome. I'm excited to go and grab mine, grab that and some Desert Curse from you as well. All the perks of being a podcaster, you just get all these fun things from your sponsors, and then I can endorse them on the show and it'd be great. Speaking of which, by the way, I thought this was interesting, you know, as I think one of the things on your Southern Teague bingo card is, as you might know, I used to be a chef.
That's right.
Which I think is actually very fitting for our guest, because I was indeed stoked about this when I was reading about the backstory of our guest that we have in the studio, who also used to be a chef and has transitioned into the world of beverages, if not necessarily booze. So I'm really excited to introduce Han Suk Cho of Kato and the founder of Zero Proof. Han, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So you're coming to us live from Los Angeles, is that right?
Yes.
Awesome.
So Han, you, as Greg just mentioned, you were a chef for quite some time, and you worked at some pretty baller spots, Providence and I'm going to probably mispronounce Naka, right? Which boast a lot of, a collection, if you will, a constellation of Michelin stars. And you were in the back of the house then. What side of the kitchen were you on? Were you pastry or savory, or did you dance a little in the middle?
I was mostly in savory, and I specialized, quote unquote, in like seafood. And I spent most of my time at Naka with fryers, different parts of fryers of tempura and whatnot, that like frying techniques in like Japanese cuisine. So yeah, I'm a fish fryer.
Well, I was a fishmonger for a while. I was a seafood butcher for about 2 years in my career, but nothing as sort of avant-garde as what you're doing, what you were doing over there. And how long did you spend of your career in kitchens?
So my career in kitchen is parallel to my career, previous career in music. So I was also a professional musician since I was very young. And of course, to support that career, I had career in kitchen, like as a prep cook and a line cook in Korea. And once that music career asked me for more funding to be academically inclined for more stable jobs, I decided to get into like fully cooking, because I just simply believed in open source education. So yeah, I was in kitchen for about 10 years, Korea and Los Angeles. And then after a while, I realized that working in the kitchen is very like physically demanding, also mentally demanding, but my just knees weren't working well as well. And I just loved being in food and beverage. So I shifted my career towards to like front of the house or the beverage side.
Well, before we jump all the way to that, which is current day, I want to, this was not in any of the notes anywhere that I saw or anything that I found about you. What sort of musician are you? Were you?
I was a composer.
What instruments did you play?
I played guitar, contrabass, so like mostly strings.
Yeah.
And I studied classical music composition throughout college.
Wow.
I mean, that's fascinating. I wish Damon was here. I'm sure he'd have a lot to say about that because he's a musician as well. The theme music for the speakeasy is from his band. He's been in many bands throughout his life and travels all over the place playing music. And that's fascinating. It's a fascinating lifestyle. And do you still at least dabble in that? Is it something you do to maybe relax or have you left?
Yeah, I still play like almost every day in the morning because supposed to be good for your brain. I like to keep my brain healthy.
Well, let me tell you what I did this morning.
Yeah.
I got up at the crack of 10.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know that Greg and I are keeping our brains sharp. That's not high on my list of priorities. I went to two different events last night and got up at around the crack of 10 as well. But that's fascinating. I'm pleased to hear that you have such a varied background. And so then you spent a lot of time, 10 years, you say, in back of the house. And then as I think, you know, same with me, I was in back of the house for 12 years. I worked at a lot of crazy restaurants too. And then I know why I moved to the front of the house. And it's probably not as noble as the reasons you chose. But what drew you to the front of the house? Because you're still on your feet, right? It's not helping your knees any. Maybe you're not lifting as much stuff. I always say front of the house is a little bit softer because I don't get burned or cut as much. But I always say as much. I still get burned and cut. Mm-hmm. So what drew you towards the front of the house?
So when I think about like food and beverage business, especially restaurants, I like to analyze in different style of music. So like working as a back of the house was very similar to being as a like classical, like performance musician. Yeah. Very like technical, like technique driven and, you know, like countless practice for the, you know, concerts every night. But there is not much room for improvisation. And working as a front of the house was very much improvisation, like being as a jazz musician. So I like that different style, and also like the guest facing role can be hard sometimes, but also sometimes when you really meet like lovely guests who are just really into what you do, you know, that kind of pays off all the hardships of being in this industry. And I really fell in love with that.
I love that analogy too, because I mean, you never think of like jazz musicians being down in the pit and out of sight. Like they're up on a stage spotlighted, like you're supposed to see them and get a little bit of that personality of them along with their music. Is that kind of something that I think you found a liking for as you moved to the front of the house? That kind of energy?
Yeah. And like every guests are different and you have to think very quick to bring the best hospitality you can provide. And you have to be very like detail oriented and like specifically improvise. Like the spontaneity is very important, like as a front of the house.
Right. In the back of the house, the ticket rolls in and you produce the product as spec'd every single time, mirror image of each one that goes out next. But in the front of the house, you can tailor everything, right? You can tailor the martini to be drier or wetter or dirty or upper on the rocks or twist or an olive based on the interaction with the guests. I know that's a pretty rudimentary example, but that's really what we're driving at, right? In the front of the house, you get to be quite a bit more autonomous from the machine that you're involved in.
And that's why I love being as a bartender, because being as a bartender is like in between of both worlds, like the good part of both work in the kitchen and being as a server, because you still have to master your craft and practice over and over to make good drinks while you're interacting with guests.
Yeah, the X factor there is the guest, right? When you're interacting with, say, the chef or the lead in the kitchen, again, it's pretty rote, right? It's going to be, here's what you're doing. We're going to do it over and over, just on my command, right? But the guest is a different guest every time, which makes them, you know, unique, each one of them a unique entity with unique needs and unique desires, and they're in at different times. So every part of it is, you know, this is a fascinating way to think of it. I've never heard this analogy before, and I'm glomming onto it pretty quickly. But you said the words in there, good drinks, and I know that you got to contribute some work to Juliana Bainbridge's book, Good Drinks. Talk to us a little bit about that experience and how, because Juliana's book is, it's all non-alcoholic, right? So now you've moved to the front of the house and you're behind the bar, but suddenly your interest is in the non-alcoholic aspect. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I moved to the front of the house position from the kitchen. Like, I started as a server at Single Thread restaurant in Sonoma. And my career in beverage actually starts with non-alcoholic beverages, not like alcoholic first.
Oh, so I have the timeline backwards. So your beginning behind the bar was focused on NA.
Yes.
Well, lead us through the trail. I'm fascinated to hear about it.
So at that point, Single Thread Restaurant had the non-alcoholic pairing program, but no one was in charge of it. It was like a group effort between sommeliers and chefs. And I've been always like fascinated about non-alcoholic beverages because some of my loved ones don't drink alcohol for various reasons. And I always had the urge of creating just good non-alcoholic drinks that is not really available anywhere other than the ones that has lots of sugar or high fructose corn syrups. So I just demanded the position as a non-alcoholic pairing creator, and they saw my experience in kitchen, which can be very helpful for prepping wise. So I took the job, and the rest is history.
I mean, so you said demanded. You went in and said, hey, this is a position that needs to exist. You should create it, and I'll take it, and I'll run with it. And tell us about the successes that generated at that restaurant.
The success was quite great because even though it's in a wine country, not a lot of people go to that restaurant to drink wine, or sometimes, you know, people were drinking wine all day and they don't necessarily want to drink more wine for dinner. So by the time I was taking charge of program for a year, 30% of the pairing sales were alcohol-free pairings. And there was like 2017, like early 2018, where not many restaurants were grabbing onto non-alcoholic beverage program. And Julia Bainbridge at the time was writing this book and literally driving everywhere in the country to find non-alcoholic people and recipes. And she ended up stumbling upon Single Thread. We met, and I provided a couple of recipes for her book.
I mean, that's fascinating to know that you were kind of spearheading this thing that has become quite a juggernaut, right? Like, the non-alcoholic movement has become very, very big and very, very profitable, and that's why so many people are rushing to market with products to fill that need. Because you did it at Single Thread, and then you moved on to another restaurant where you did the same thing, Dialogue, right?
Yes.
And then I guess I would ask, what took you from Dialogue to where in there does Zero come in?
So about 6 months in at Dialogue, I met many wonderful guests who encouraged me to bottle my pairings because they want to buy it and put it in their fridge. And then pandemic hit. So all the restaurants were closed. And that's when I got the encouragement to myself that
I mean, the dreaded word arose, right? Pivot. We all had to pivot.
That's the word I was looking for, yeah.
So you pivoted and you started bottling cocktails for your own company. Mm-hmm. And you are the, as we talked off air, you're the founder, you're the president, you're the chief, you're all the employees. There's only you.
Yes.
And you're still, are you still keeping up with Zero? Does Zero still produce products?
Oh yeah, definitely producing products. Now we are in 6 restaurants in LA and we only distribute to restaurants because I encourage people to pair with food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, so you don't sell direct to consumer. It's you're doing programs for restaurants local.
Yes, restaurants.
That's incredible.
Only,
you know,
like,
I have
no
a restaurant
shops
out there, and I think I need some NA products. So you and I should talk off the air. Because NA, we've spoken about it on the air a few times. Greg, Damon, and I. NA for me is a. I've had a really struggle with it. I'm a very unique person. We all are, but. I think I'm the total opposite of what you just mentioned about you have some loved ones who don't drink for whatever reason. Well, I don't drink anything non-alcoholic. I drink water and alcohol, and that's been going on for 24 years. My New Year's resolution in 2000 was to drink water only for a year, which I did. And at the end of 2000, I said, well, I can have alcohol again, but nothing else. So I don't drink Coke or any sodas. I don't drink juice, milk, coffee, tea. I drink water and alcohol. Mm-hmm. So coming up with non-alcoholic cocktails for me has been a real, I don't know, bugaboo, very difficult. So I'm happy to see that there are products out there that I can just maybe grab a hold of and employ. So we should definitely talk off the air about getting some of your products at my restaurant Ubuntu.
like we said, podcasters are trusted advertisers. What can I say? Look at them in action right now. So they heard about this product in a podcast. And he's already interested.
I heard about it in a podcast that I'm doing.
And I'll say what's different about Zero Proof is that a lot of NA drinks out as of moment are like wine alternatives or spirit alternatives, but Zero Proof is very much soda alternative.
Mm-hmm.
That is not sweet, so it doesn't the flavors are very like reminiscent of like sparkling wine or sparkling rosé, but not exactly mimicking the flavor so that any ages can enjoy.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, so this is something that I wanted to talk about, just kind of the mental framework that you approach it with. Because I think Souther and I, when we've tried to do non-alcoholic concepts, have approached it from the same way of like, okay, we're looking at it from a mindset of substitution almost, of like, I want to use whiskey for this, but I can't. So like, what can I do instead that's going to get us there? Is that, it sounds like that might not be the way that you're approaching it though. You're sort of approaching it as from a whole, trying to create a whole new thing. And I love this idea of having a non-alcoholic beverage director, because you never at a restaurant that was worth its salt. I mean, I'm sure the sommelier could probably step in and write the cocktail program, but they wouldn't do it as well as if you had like a beverage director who is there to do that, you know? So I guess I just want to hear a little bit about your creative process and how you come up with some of these ideas.
Yeah. When I was first creating the pairing program, it was very important to create something that is not like mimicking spirits or wine. I'll take like flavors and ideas from it, but like, how do I say this? There are also people who's never drank alcohol in their life before, and bring them a mimic of whiskey isn't really gonna like touch their heart, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And like creating something like totally different or something that is maybe like universally nostalgic, but as an adult drink. And that idea actually grabbed onto me more. And just, you know, I'm a composer. Like creating something new has been like very big part of my life, and doing it like through drinks, which is like most interactive way of art. So yeah.
I love that. And I want to, it seems like, I feel like no one brings up things that have a nostalgic connection without having an example in their back pocket ready to go of some nostalgic connection that they've made with some of their drinks. Can you give us an example of something that's kind of touched a nostalgic nerve for you that you've created?
Yeah. So as a kid, I used to hike alone a lot, which could have been dangerous now that I think of it, but...
You survived. You're here. You made it.
You did fine.
Yeah, and in Korea, lots of mountains are like filled with pine trees because that's their national tree. So like just smelling like fresh pine was like my daily routine in the morning, and brought that memory because pine tree grows almost everywhere unless like there's like hot climate. But so I created pine soda with foraged pine needles and like hint, like squeeze of sudachi, which is the young yuzu juice. So like nice, bright, refreshing, and just simple, like, you know, nothing too like crazy. I would not put more than
Pretty simple. Just went out and foraged some pine needles. Got a hold of some sudachi. You know, force carbonated it. Nothing.
Yeah,
nothing
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Snap, snap. Easy, easy peasy. but I do understand what you're saying. Quite a universal aroma. We all, mm-hmm. You know, you say pine, everyone can sense that and smell that right away from their own sense memories. And then to put it in a bottle and offer it as a beverage, I'm sure. Again, just touched on a lot of people at the same time. Mm-hmm. And was that one of your first sort of creations in this realm?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the first one. And the second one I got a lot of popularity was warm sesame milk that is seasoned with like ginger juice. And the thing about wine pairing is the spectrum of temperature is quite limited. And through my non-alcoholic pairing, I tried to break that. So I would pair with like warm drinks or like pair with like different texture, like thick and thin. So the sesame milk was very thick, warm, and hearty pairing that didn't really exist before.
That's incredible, and I definitely want to get more into talking about pairing these things with food, because that is something I'm really curious to talk to you about. You did a 20 course pairing dinner that I absolutely want to dive into. But before we do that, we should take a quick break and hear from some of our sponsors. So we'll be right back talking with Han Suk Cho here on The Speakeasy. Stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City, Long Island, and Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy here on Heritage Radio Network. And today we are talking with Han Suk Cho, the founder of Zero Proof and the best new bartender of 2023, according to Punch. So congratulations to you on that, mm-hmm. especially because, as we were discussing in the top half of the show, your career is based around making zero proof NA beverages. which I think is very cool that that is something that a major publication like Punch is taking so seriously. I think that's right. A huge win for everyone that's working in the non-alcoholic space. But I also want to talk on about something we touched on right before the break, which is food pairings for these. You did a 20-course dinner pairing with your zero-proof beverages, but also many, many times a night, you do pairings with a ton of dishes that come out at your home restaurant. So talk to us a little bit about that. Talk to us a little bit about creating a pairing menu with non-alcoholic stuff and maybe some of the extra freedoms that it gives you that that maybe booze hounds like Souther and I haven't necessarily thought of.
Yeah. Plus the aspect of like, just to jump in, plus the aspect of like, sharing, it's a collaborative work when you do a pairing. So you're working with the kitchen team, you're working probably with some purveyors, maybe even some farmers. Yeah. Talk about the whole sort of like sphere of it.
Yeah. So I live in California where there are amazing produce, like seasonal produce all year round. And, creating beverages, like sustainability is very important for my ethos. So creating pairings for 20 courses. In that food menu, the idea, the concept was included three seasons. The one that was before and one you're currently in and the one that's coming up. So for example, if you're in fall, your menu was highlighting summer, fall, and winter. And one of my favorite things to do is buying like brews and like not exactly the perfect quote-unquote produce that farmers cannot sell and utilizing those to my drinks because that helps farmers and it's drinks. I don't need like a perfect garnished herbs and strawberries. And yeah, creating 20 course, trying to think how I did that. And yeah, also utilizing lots of like kitchen scraps, like peels, trims, and ends. Just bring, you know, everything I can possibly and making balanced drinks. And I personally think making food delicious and making drink delicious is not the hardest part. That's actually the easiest part. But relating like the memories and touching people's heart with these unlimited things is the hard part. And that's what I mostly like focused on.
Yeah, I noticed in conversation here, you've used terms that are there's pretty pointedly emotional several times, touching people's heart, loved ones, passion, etc. Talk to us a little bit about like about that specifically. How are you emotionally tied to the work that you do and how does that translate itself into the glasses that you push across the bar?
Yeah, being coming from like music industry, like especially being as a composer, putting my sincerity to my work has been like very big part of my life. And a lot of times when I was composing music, I would be like extremely depressed for time to time because I was just writing like very sad pieces. And that tied and then moved on to my drink and food creating process as well, because I genuinely believe the sincerity translates to any creative works.
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely fully agree with that. And that's, again, I think it's a very unique position that you are coming from, having this musical background and the way that you simply view the world around you. It sounds quite fascinating and frankly, a little bit sort of tranquil. But we work in a fast paced, semi chaotic environment when we're at bar and restaurant, right?
I agree, except for the semi part, but sure.
Well, you know, there's something to be said about fine dining. It's a little bit more tranquil, you know. This leads to something I think you want to talk about, which is career management. It seems to me that you've been pretty aware of where you have been when you've been there and what that's going to mean to your next steps. Talk to us a little bit about how you feel about how you managed your own career and maybe how you see that other people could better themselves a little bit.
Yeah. I think a lot of like restaurant and bar industry, like this career isn't their first choice. A lot of, you know, artists and other industry people get into this F&B to support their quote unquote original passion, which isn't always profitable. And you get into this restaurant industry and work extremely hard like you were doing, but working hard itself isn't always get you somewhere. And I've been very like fortunate that I was able to move from kitchen to front of the house to bar and like find great like work environments. And, you know, like burnouts are also like very, very common nowadays, or it's been common because of the poor career management. And just like sense of urgency, like people don't really teach you how to get there or how to have that. And
yeah, I think we're lacking mentors right now, right? I think that the mentorship has faded a little bit. It was kind of, I think, already in decline. And I think with the pandemic, a lot of sort of veteran players in both front and back of the house moved on to other career paths, leaving kind of a gap.
Mm-hmm. And like food and beverage industry is like a mixture of like you need this for survival, but it's also an art form. It's one of very like unique industry to do that, and not having like enough mentors, and it's not even like it's nobody's fault that we don't have many mentors. It's just very like hard industry where you have to really think about yourself. So I've been very lucky to meet a couple mentors, but also like meeting like good colleagues, like peers, and supporting each other. It's like that's been very important.
Yeah, well, I know that you work at Cato with one of my former employees, Austin Henley, and I know that you guys are open 5 nights a week, and the entire team works full time, correct? So you're all there, all together, all the time, which I'm certain builds camaraderie and also builds, to pull from the music world, that's going to build some rhythm together, right? You dance better together. You understand one another better. In most of the bars and restaurants that we get to work in, your schedule may be totally different than someone else's. You may only see someone once every week. So you'd never get to kind of build that rapport and be in concert with one another. So I'm certain that that helps. I do want to mention that Cato was awarded the exceptional cocktail, only the second year, right, of the exceptional cocktail award from Michelin, which is amazing because you already have a Michelin star for the restaurant itself. And now for the second year in a row, Michelin has come out with this exceptional cocktail award. And then I want to blow my own horn a little bit and say that, you took it over there, which Austin Henley is the head of the bar. And the previous year, when the award was in its inaugural year, it was taken by Mansky, also out in L.A., which is led by another former Maury Margo employee, Kyle Hunter-Bailey. So you're getting great accolades. And when Austin was on, he mentioned that the non-alcoholic pairing, because you offer a full pairing for the dinner menu that's non-alcoholic, sells about 20% per night, that's incredible.
Yes, it has definitely gotten up since we got the award, which we're very, very grateful. And yeah, most of our guests just don't drink alcohol. yeah, for so many different reasons, and just providing something like great to drink, which like rounds up the full hospitality. Especially, I mean, for example, a couple weeks ago, we had a family of three. It was a mother and their children celebrating the mother's birthday. And she told us that she doesn't drink alcohol, so she'll just drink water and her children can drink cocktails. And I don't think she encountered any like alcohol-free, like good alcohol-free options in her life. So I just poured her de-alcoholized sparkling rosé like on me so that she can cheers with her children. And I think that really like touched her mind and opened up her eyes that there are options and we are just, we would love to, you know, show that option so she can feel included. And which right. also like touched our minds and such a great, you know, nice moment in hospitality.
Sure. Of course she was there to celebrate and she was going to, you know, raise a glass with her kids of water and you gave her something else and made her feel a little bit more celebratory and included. I think now I've only been to the bar, to the restaurant twice. And I sat at the bar both times, once I was alone and once I was with a friend, but, I believe in my heart of heart, and Austin and you poured me tastes of many of the cocktails around the menu as well as the NAs. I believe that if, as a guest, if I were at a table of four, I would order, I'm personally going to have the cocktail pairing, whoever has wine or whatever else at the table, I would order the non-alcoholic pairing for the table just to have one to try them all, right? Mm-hmm. If I go to a restaurant as quality as Cato or, you know, Michelin level, I want to try what they're offering, right? And Cato only does a tasting menu. There's no a la carte, right? So you're going to get everything from the kitchen. I would be absolutely willing to plunk down the money to get everything from the bar as well.
That's great to hear.
I'm your ideal customer.
Yeah. So many good products on this podcast today that Souther can't wait to try.
That's cool thing is after our guests find out that there are alcohol-free like pairings and cocktail options, people who like often drink alcohol still decide to get non-alcoholic pairings.
Yeah.
Like what I often see is people will start with alcoholic cocktail and then have non-alcoholic pairings so that they don't get like too buzzed or, you know, sometimes they just want to get something that is not wine or something that's different and then like end with, you know, a little neat Amaro.
Yeah.
Why which not? Is you like, can... you're having like all like whole different experience in one sitting.
Yeah. Why not? I definitely personally have been to tasting menus where there was an alcoholic pairing and, you know, you start getting buzzed and then the next day you're having a little bit of trouble remembering, you know, the last several courses. Right. So why not temper yourself throughout the meal so that you can not only have the great time of enjoying it, but you can have the great memory of having had it as well.
Yeah. And also everybody's like alcohol intake level is different. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people go with the alcoholic pairing for the pressures. But by providing different options, I think the guests can actually look at themselves and be honest with what they can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love also the philosophy that you're approaching this from, which is not to view it as an alternative. You know, I think for so long the NA programs at bars have kind of been like, you know, like the cocktail's poor cousin, for example. And there isn't the same, you don't feel the same, to touch on a point that Souther made earlier, you don't feel the same passion behind it that there is behind like the cocktail program or the wine program or the beer program. But I think what's important is that you're not thinking of this as an alternative. You're thinking of this as a whole other branch of things that the very talented team at Cato and the other spots that you've worked with can offer. And I think that is, it seems to me, the key for really making an NA program that can account for 20% of beverage sales at the end of a month.
Yeah, I think it's incredible. I think it's incredible that you've got so many eyes on you. And I think it's incredible that you've got so many participants. People are they're there for it and they're showing it. You know, it's, I think maybe a little bit unique that you're in LA. Everybody has to drive everywhere. People thought I was crazy because I walked everywhere when I was out there. I walked all the way over to Cato and people were, I can't believe you walked. So, you know, people are
pampering themselves. Is that even legal
here? Yeah, right. I'm like, you got the most beautiful, wide, very clean sidewalks and nobody's on them. Nobody.
Wow.
You know, that, I walk like
Okay. I've actually like never been to Los Angeles.
And never pass a human being.
That sounds amazing. I've never been to LA and everyone tells me that I'm too much of a New Yorker to enjoy it. I'm like, no, that my least favorite thing about this city is when you're on one of our garbage and rat riddled sidewalks and there's three people walking in a line in front of you. I know, greatest city in the fucking world, people. No, I always say New York City sucks, which is why it's a real shame. It's the greatest place on earth. But like, right. God, a sidewalk. I feel like I've had dreams about sidewalks where there is no one in front of you and no trash and no rats. That is okay. All right. That's it's settled. I'm also sold on the product I've heard about on this podcast. I'm coming out to, I'm walking to Cato when I'm in LA.
Well, Han, we're sadly coming to the end of this thing here. Where can people follow along with what's going on with you? What's going on with Zero and what's going on with Cato?
Yeah, you can follow me on my Instagram account at the Han Suk Cho, THEHANSUKCHO. And for my company, Zero Proof is Zero Proof Bevs, also Instagram.
Right, Zero Proof Bevs. And speaking of Zero Proof and speaking of being an influencer, if any restaurants are listening that are out in LA, do you service anybody outside of LA or is it just LA?
Just LA. We are at Tsubaki, Kin, and four other restaurants.
Yeah, great. So if any restaurants are listening and want to have some award-winning NA options on their list, reach out to Zero. Han, it's been a real pleasure having you on. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know it's early for you over there. I don't know. I can't wait to visit Cato again. I'll be out there before the end of the year to do some work in my restaurant in LA's. And again, I've been out there twice and I've been to Cato twice. So every time I come, I come sit at the bar. So I look forward to seeing you behind the bar again.
Look forward to see you again. And thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's it for this episode of The Speakeasy. To go check out my Kickstarter for my hot sauce, Desert Curse. You can find it on Kickstarter and you can back that product. And then hopefully I'll get some out to you ASAP. We're approaching our next stretch goal already. So I'm over the moon and thrilled with how well the Kickstarter is doing. I'll be blasting out to social media about my mugs. If you're interested in one of those, I've only got 70 left. I only made 100. I've already sold 30. I guess that's it for this episode of The Speakeasy. Please go to heritageradionetwork.org, click on the beating heart so that you can donate to keep shows like this one on the air, and tune in next week for whatever we're talking about next week, guys. Thanks so much and cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers. So you don't
shun the devil with your rock. The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.